In the last few years, Ken, you've turned your attention to taking the integral model and applying it into different spheres of activity, business, law, education, art. And first of all, I'd just like to hear a little bit about how that came about. I mean, how the idea of taking the model and actually saying, okay, what would this look like in business? What would this look like in the legal profession? How did you start doing that? Why did you start doing it?
I sort of got into this whole thing. By this whole thing, I mean the writing and working on integral ideas. Obviously, I kind of backed into it, as we've discussed. I didn't go to college for this. I didn't get degrees in it. And the only real job I've ever had that I can tell is a dishwasher. It's the only really good paying job. Now, actually, fortunately, I'm doing okay. But I really feel that, you know, my entire life has been devoted to something I backed into accidentally, in a certain sense. And because of that, though, I always sort of thought that my primary obligation was simply to do the theoretical work as best I possibly could. And that meant do my homework, you know, study all the various areas, read literally everything that had been written on it. And so I would tend to do that. And that's sort of the pattern that I've had for the first 25 years of my life, really. At some point, it became obvious that the ideas were useful to a large number of people who were attempting to apply them in their own lives. They wanted to be more integrally informed about what they were doing. And it didn't necessarily mean they wanted to change what they were doing, but they wanted a way to connect it to all these other things that are out there in a way that was meaningful. So even if they were doing Zen, they didn't want to stop doing Zen, but they wanted to know how it fit with neuroscience and how that fit with biochemistry and how that fit with Jane Lovinger's ego development and so on. So people were sort of wanting to become more integrally informed, and the weight of correspondence and stuff that started coming in really just got voluminous at a certain point. And at that point, people also started wanting to donate money and sort of get these kinds of things going. And I kind of put that off most of my life. And just a whole series of events came together where it became obvious it was probably a good idea to go ahead and really try to move out into the world of application. And primarily by putting people together, they were already doing this. There were people that had been applying AQL, all quadrant, all level, all line. There are dozens of business management firms doing this. It's being used to reorganize political counties and towns and laws. It's being used in ecological endeavors. It's being used in integrally informed medicine, in art, lots of it in education and so on. So it was more a matter of kind of touching bases with people that had this enormous amount of practical wisdom about how to apply these things, much more practical wisdom than I had, and then all of us kind of getting together and mutually sort of helping each other move this thing forward.
Okay, so I want to have an all-quadrant, all-level business. What does that mean?
There are all sorts of aspects of business, and you can apply an AQL or an integrally informed approach to all of them. There's marketing, there's management, there's leadership, product development. If you look at the major theories of management, for example, and you look at the four quadrants, I, we, it, and its, the four major management theories deal with those four quadrants. And so these theories are basically ways to say, I'm in business and I'm managing people that work for me. How can I manage them most effectively and efficiently? And how can I produce a product that is going to be the best that it can? In the upper right quadrant, you have quality control, which basically says you watch people's behavior and you watch the quality of the product, as carefully as you can. In the lower right quadrant, you have systems approaches, which basically try to look at the overall approach to business in terms of a systems organization. Very, very popular, very famous approach from Meg Wheatley to Peter Senge. A systems approach is probably one of the most effective and well-known. In the lower left quadrant, the we, you have cultural management, values management. People actually go in and look at the internal culture of a corporation, and they say, look, this is where some of the problems are occurring. You have to diagnose you have an internal culture problem. We can help you with that corporate culture. In the upper left quadrant, the I, you have people that go in and say, look, in your own management style, you lack emotional intelligence. You lack a certain type of awareness. You lack a certain type of leadership style. We will teach you that. So you look at these four major management schools, techniques, and so on, and you realize that they're really, you can combine all of them in an integrally informed management approach that realizes that you can't just take one of those and make it apply to everybody, but that each of these different dimensions of your own management experience can be effectively improved by one of these different techniques. So that's just one example of how you can become integrally informed in terms of business management. You can do the same thing with marketing, same thing with leadership, same thing with promotion and so on. And we have literally thousands of people around the world that are doing that, including places from MIT to Notre Dame. Notre Dame School of Business now has you can actually get training in all quadrant integral leadership, for example.
So that helps me understand the all quadrant part. Now, what about the all level part and applying it to a business?
Yeah. Right. The many, many ways of that. If you look at research done on cycles of business growth, for example, Christensen from Harvard has done a great deal of work on this. So has Jeffrey Moore. They found that there are four major cycles that businesses go through. And what they're really describing, if you look at their work, are cycles in the lower right quadrant. In other words, the exterior institutional forms of business cycle, from its first innovation of creating the new idea or product to starting to implement it to a mass production, so to speak, and then a customer relation. And these various cycles that businesses go through, if you know what cycle you're going through in the lower right, you can more effectively see what problems and what solutions you can work with. In the lower left, what research has demonstrated from both of these individuals is that each of those four cycles actually works best with a different corporate culture. Now, they don't come close to spelling this out, although it's right there. They just don't have the terms for it. And those corporate cultures really reflect level 3, 4, 5, and 6. So what they're showing, what their research shows, is that a corporate culture at a different level is more effective for a different cycle of business production and so on. So that's an example of how levels can come into play. Also, within a corporate culture, you have people that are at level 3, level 4, level 5, level 6, and so on. And these people form subcultures within the corporation. An integral leader understands these different value systems and how people are using them so they can interact with them much more effectively. And an integral leader is somebody that we try to train them to be integrally informed from level 6 so that they can look at all quadrants, all levels, all lines in individuals and therefore manage them more effectively, provide more effective leadership, and also a better corporate culture and product as well. And there's a lot of evidence on all of these. It's actually very interesting. Business is one of the areas where integrally informed practice has taken off fairly quickly, even though it doesn't necessarily deal with some of the higher levels, some of the spiritual or transpersonal levels, but because you do have to show actual results in the real world, then an aqual approach can do that. And so business has been able to move with it very quickly.
So of all the fields that the integral model has been brought into, where do you feel most excited about it?
There are several, and business is one just because so many businesses and consulting firms have jumped on it so quickly. There are several books out on it in European languages that use aqual, for example, and where same thing is happening in the States. I mentioned Notre Dame, for example.
You say aqual, you're saying...
AQAL, which is just short for all quadrant, all level, all line, all state. So we just call it aqual. It's kind of a shorthand. Other areas that have had immediate application certainly include integral psychology and integral therapy. And it's particularly important for psychiatrists and psychotherapists because there's a huge battle, well understood, within psychiatry and psychology and what we would call upper left and upper right, which means the interior of the eye, the phenomenological approaches or introspective approaches or psychoanalysis or meditation, and the upper right, which means brain chemistry, neurotransmitters, Prozac, Xanax, Wellbutrin, I mean, all of that that tends to basically look at the sort of biological medical model of neurosis and problems and so on. And there are even books out on it talking about the horrible dilemma that psychiatric residents go through when they enter medical school and they know they have a soul, they know they have an interior, they know they have a self, and yet they're taught a model that reduces their upper left interior to upper right brain states. And they're just supposed to treat neuronal imbalances and serotonin imbalances and dopamine imbalances. And it's dehumanizing and really horrifying in a sense. And it's vaguely effective in certain overt ways. And so that's sort of the model that is followed. And that's what insurance companies pay for. So an integrally informed psychiatric or psychological practice is an enormous relief for the practitioners themselves because it gives them a way to say, okay, look, all of this is important. I can do the Prozac, I can do all of that in the upper right, but I can also do this introspective work or meditative work or psychotherapeutic work on value and meaning and inner conflicts and so on. And that fits as well with lower left cultural contexts that are very important, and lower right, all the social institutions that individuals are caught in that can contribute to neurosis as well. So integral psychiatry and psychology is another field that's had a very quick acceptance. It's very gratifying. Integral medicine, particularly what we call integrally informed medicine, is also very, very rapidly rising because it offers an alternative to conventional and alternative medicine. Conventional medicine treats the disease. Alternative medicine treats the patient, the whole person. And integrally informed medicine treats the physician. It gives them a way to hold all of this in awareness. So they've been jumping on that very quickly too, as have nurses, which is great. There's a lot of movement happening in consciousness studies, a lot happening in the traditional religious orientations who want to sort of plug their lineages into modern and postmodern endeavors. A lot of work on integral ecology, which I think is going to make a very big impact.
Can you say a little bit about that? What does that mean?
Integral ecology. Part of the difficulty, and actually we're working with several people at Integral Institute, including Amory and Hunter Lovins, who had done obviously they're pioneers at the Rocky Mountain Institute, which is probably the world's premier think tank for alternative energy sources. And they just did a book with Paul Hawkins called Natural Capitalism, which is in a sense a kind of ecological capitalism, an attempt to make a sustainable economics that doesn't damage ecology, does as little damage as possible. The problem with most approaches to ecology is that they're what we call lower right quadrants, and they leave out the interior quadrants. So what you do is you go in and you recommend recycling, you recommend hypercars, you recommend leaving a lower footprint on the biosphere, you recommend adopting the Kyoto Accords, you recommend reducing ozone depletion effects and so on, all of which are very, very important, but very partial. Because in order to hold these changes in place, in order to actually care for ecology as a global system, you have to have an interior consciousness that's at level 5 or higher. Because levels of consciousness lower than that don't have global concerns. They're either egocentric or ethnocentric. And to put it bluntly, they don't give a rat's ass. They just don't care about world-centric global concerns. So if you want to have a sustainable ecology, you have to have a sustainable world-centric or higher consciousness. Or else nobody's going to care. It's not going to be held in place. So part of the problem is that the ecological movements have had a wonderful understanding of the web of life and Gaia and all the things that are necessary to sustain that. But they have a very poor understanding of the interior stages of growth that are necessary to support that exterior ecological intervention, so to speak. So what we do with integral ecology or integrally informed ecology is we certainly make all recommendations about what you need to do in terms of environmental protection, but we also show the types of growth and development of culture and consciousness, the interior dimensions, that are necessary to sustain ecological consciousness. And so that's one of the major drives and one of the major goals that the integral ecology branch of Integral Institute has. A secondary activity that I think is just as important is if you take the various types of approaches to eco-philosophy and ecology, and there are about a dozen major different schools of ecology, you can map them on an all-quadrant, all-level map, so to speak. And so you can see where each of them are placing an emphasis. And of course, our point is that they're all right. They're all correct. And they all need to be incorporated in a more integral model that includes the strengths of all of them. So that's another project that we do in terms of writing and presentation and so on, is basically coming up with a truly comprehensive approach to ecology.
Okay, a couple other examples. Yeah. Integral law?
The integral law, or integral informed law, is in a sense the same kind of thing that we've seen in the other disciplines, which is that human beings have all of these dimensions already, and therefore if you're engaged in anything, the law or medicine, that the more of these dimensions you take into account, the more comprehensive the practice is going to be. So if you look at law, there are major theories of law about what constitutes law. And these fit the quadrants, just as management theory did in business. And then there's also levels of law or levels of justice and legal development. And we gave a few examples of that earlier when we were talking about what constituted law during the Roman time, Roman law, for example, versus law today in democratic societies. So there's a whole quadrants, levels, lines going on with both the theory of law and the practice of law. And one of the most important ones, it's very much connected, is on the application side, and that has to do with criminal justice and incarceration, the justice system, meaning prisons, punishment. And there's at least one book on the history of penal institutions in the United States from an AQUIL perspective. Because, again, if you look at theories of crime and punishment, they fall into the quadrants. You have four major theories of crime and punishment, and as well as four theories of cure, so to speak. All of them have some piece of the truth. You want to bring all of them into an integrally informed law and criminal justice. Levels are also involved because types of crime are more prevalent at certain levels of development. And they're fairly obvious. The early levels, egocentric power and so on, tend to be criminally motivated in terms of immediate gratification, immediate theft, rape, these kinds of crimes that are just quick and brutal and don't require a lot of sort of cognitive foresight, so to speak. By the time you get to higher levels of development, then you have white-collar crime, computer theft, very, very smart people still doing criminal behavior. But levels and lines come into play as well when you're looking at crime, the types of crime, and so on. And then also it would have something to do with, can we indeed reform people that we judge to be criminal? And that does play into capital punishment and so on. All of that's related to an integrally informed approach to law and criminal justice. And there's a really impressive work being done in that area. I think it might have a pretty big impact and fairly quickly. It makes immediate sense to people in law enforcement and theoretical law. And so they're picking it up very quickly.